You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to On the Couch,
On the Couch
with Dr. Michelle on LA Talk Radio.
Everybody, good day to you. It's Friday the 13th. I love Friday the 13th. We're going to talk about that too. Let's get into this a little bit. That's my intro music. Gotta have it. Get you in the mood a little bit. This is Dr. Michelle. Happy day. Your friendly psychologist. Hope you're having a good one so far. Make it more so and keep it here on LATalkRadio.com because we've got some great stuff coming up for you today. Of course, this morning we're going to be talking about some of the regular stuff I bring you on the couch. Yeah. I help answer some listeners' problems. Yeah, help you out with some stuff going on. No problem. And answer some of your emails that came in. Also, I've got some of the latest research articles. Fun stuff. You know, how like being bored on the job can kill you? Literally. Yeah. Got a surprising sleep study. Yeah. Coming up today, also a live personality test. I love giving these personality tests to folks because we can do it on the air live here and you can figure out how you look at love. Now, you probably know your personality traits and what you're all about and all that stuff, but it's always kind of fun. And these are fun tests to do. So we'll do that as well. Also, I'm going to turn you on to some of the weirdest star, you know, actors and musicians demands. When they go on a tour or when they go on a movie shoot or whatever, some of the demands they make before they go into a hotel or what they have to have in their green room or behind the stage or whatever. And this ranges from narcissism to weird and creepy. And that's psychological talk. And if you'd like to call me, you may do so. Always open to your calls, 818-602-4498. I'll try to help you answer some issues. But I do have a lot of folks who've emailed me, so I want to get to answering some of those questions as well. But first, I'd like to just bring it up. Friday the 13th is today, and I had a couple of clients call me and say, oh, I forgot it's Friday the 13th. I'm not driving in today, because that's a bad day. I'm not getting on the freeway. Okay. That's cool. If that makes you feel better, I'm good with that. But let's look at that objectively for just a second before we get started here. Friday the 13th. All right. First of all, it's a phobia of Friday the 13th. Now, let me see if I can pronounce this. Periskevidacatrophia. No. Periskevidacataphobia. 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 Come on with me now. Let's go. Like many human beliefs, the fear of Friday the 13th isn't exactly grounded in scientific logic, but, you know, the really strange thing, most of the folks who believe that the day is unlucky offer no explanation at all, logical or illogical, as with most superstitions. You know, it's a superstition. People fear Friday the 13th for its own sake. They don't need any background information. They just need hearsay and people going, oh, yeah, it's really bad. And then on the other hand, many folks who are into the Christian tradition say the fear of Friday the 13th stems from a couple of separate fears. The fear of the number 13 and Fridays. So here's the dealio. 13 is significant to Christians because it's the number of people who were present, of course, at the Last Supper. Jesus and his 12 apostles, remember. Judas, the apostle who betrayed Jesus, was the 13th member of the party to arrive. You see? Also, Christians have been traditionally wary of Fridays because Jesus was crucified on a Friday. Some theologians also say that Adam and Eve ate from the forbidden fruit on a Friday. A lot of alliteration there. The forbidden fruit on a Friday. And the flood. The great flood began on a Friday. In the past, many Christians would never begin any new project or a trip on a Friday, fearing that they'd be doomed on the start. Okay. Also, sailors were really superstitious. Supposedly, there's a legend, and it's not verified. It says back in the 1800s, there was a ship called the HMS Friday. And the British Navy said, we're going to do an experiment. We're going to misprove that Friday's a bad day. So the Navy selected the crew on a Friday. They launched the ship on a Friday and even selected a man named James Friday as the ship's captain. So they're going, nah, nah, nah. Then one Friday morning, the ship set off in its maiden voyage and disappeared forever. That's probably untrue, but it's fun to tell. It's a legend, and it goes around, you know. Similar, of course, entirely factual story is the flight of Apollo 13. Not good. Just happened to be named 13. Some historians say that the Christian distrust of Fridays is actually linked to the early Catholic Church's overall suppression of pagan religions. You're a pagan! The number 13 has also been considered pagan, because there's 13 months in the pagan lunar calendar. Some go back to number 13, to the ancient Norse culture. In the mythology, the beloved hero Baldur was killed at a banquet by the mischievous god Loki. Yeah, he crashed the party of 12. That's what they do today. It brought the group to 13. Both Friday and the number 13 were once closely associated with capital punishment. In British tradition, Friday was the conventional day for public hangings. And there were supposedly 13 steps leading up to the noose. You see this pattern? It's true. It's bad. No. The folklore of Friday the 13th doesn't have much to do with folks' fears today, I think. You know, psychologically speaking, the fear has much more to do with personal experience. We learn at a young age, don't we, that Friday the 13th is supposed to be unlucky for whatever reason. And then we look for evidence. Right? It isn't really hard to come by, because if you get in like a car accident on one Friday the 13th, if you lose your wallet or even like spill your coffee all over yourself, I do that like twice a day. That day will probably stay with you. You see? It was Friday the 13th. But if you think about it, bad things, big and small, happen all the time. Yeah. So if you're looking for bad luck on Friday the 13th, you're going to find it. You'll find anything bad in anything if you're looking for it. Anything. I just want to say this about that. I actually have always had, as far as I can remember, which is not too far, but no. Actually, I met my husband on Friday the 13th. I'm still with him. He's a great guy. Wonderful relationship. I love the man. Best thing that ever happened to me. So that disproves that. and so far, all turned out just fine. I was supposed to have my son on the 13th. Had him on the 14th, which is fine. Had almost the child on the 13th, which is a blessing in my life. So, received funding for a wonderful home on Friday the 13th. It's all good, baby. So I look at it as a good day. And therefore, I'm going to have a good day. Friday the 13th has always been a good day for me. So that's how I look at it. And I'm always looking for the good. So when shit happens today, I'm going to go, no biggie. It happened yesterday too and the day before. And there you go. Oh, by the way, you can find me on my website at drmichelletherapy.com. I have a direct link to the show here, so if you want to listen live. And some of the cool past shows you can download as well. Really neat stuff going on there. That's Dr. Dr. Michelle with two L's and two E's, therapy.com. Come on down. Love to hear from you. All right, I want to get to a couple of these studies, and then I really do want to get to our personality test about love. This is a fun one. It's about animals. We're all animals. Okay, first study here I have. Being bored on the job could kill you. And this came out on Friday. Last year. You got it. The 13th. The mind-numbing boredom of working on the assembly line may be deadlier for you than the strain of constant office deadlines. This is off Health Scout, by the way. HealthScout.com. Workers with little control or decision-making in their jobs were 43% to 50% more likely to die during a 5 to 10 year period than workers who had high-stress jobs, but much more responsibility for making decisions. Came out in the Psychosomatic Medicine Journal. The University of Texas School of Public Health study included more than 25,000 folks, 25,000, that's a huge study, who were employed for a minimum of 3 years. The information for the study was collected every year from 1968 to 1991. It's what we call a longitudinal study. You study what goes on with people over time. Having a job that doesn't demand much of you and gives you no opportunity to make decisions could result in social disengagement. Okay? And you know that whole theory of health based on your social activities. The more social you are, I'm not talking about random sex. Come on now. I'm talking about getting out and having a support system with friends and family, of course. But people, a good place you like to work that stimulates you and gets you thinking. You've got responsibilities, you're stressed, but you have responsibilities and you're focusing on doing that stuff. You're taking care of business. So, social disengagement. If you're not thinking about things and working on things and keeping focused, you're bored. You're withdrawing. You're like, this just sucks. Also, you can do high-risk behaviors that lead to a higher death rate, the researchers say. High-risk behaviors because you're bored. You know what I'm talking about. Uh-huh. So they say the amount of control a person has during a working life and the value of the work itself also may be important factors in the risk of dying. The amount of control a person has. How much control do you have? We're all control freaks. We all need some kind of control in our life. Gives us a sense of self-identity, gives us a sense of who we are. We are handling things in our life. Makes us feel better. So the amount of control a person has during a working life and the value of the work are also important factors. What am I doing that's making things work? What kind of feedback am I getting from coworkers, the manager? Am I the manager? How am I working with others? How do I feel? Basically, keeping busy and having responsibility and focusing on things that stimulate you are probably healthier for you. There you go. A little note on a sleep study here. It says a moderate amount of sleep is best. Studies indicate that folks who sleep 6.5 to 7.5 hours a night live longer than people who sleep considerably more or less than that. I know, you're really surprised, aren't you? Because everybody says, oh, I'm going to have a good sleep. And everybody says, you can never make up for sleep. So you've been doing 3 to 5 hours because you're crazed or something's going on. Had a little too much energy drink, late at night with your pals. And you're rolling all night long. Whoops, you got to get up at 6:30 and go to work, and you're just fried. You've been doing this 4 to 5 days in a row. Well, they say it's really not as bad as too much sleep sometimes. Okay, so the research took place at the Scripps Clinic Sleep Center in La Jolla. If you want to get a sleep study done on yourself, that's the place to go, baby. La Jolla, California, the Scripps Clinic Sleep Center. So you go to the medical center there and you go to sleep. They monitor you and find out what your issues are. Long sleep seems to start at 8 hours. That's what they're saying. Sleeping 8.5 hours a night might be a little worse than sleeping 5 hours. Now, the results contradict notions that sleeping too little is a major health risk. And everybody's paranoid over insomnia. And of course, now I'm not an investment counselor, but it has fueled the explosive growth of over-the-counter and prescription sleep aids. The annual spending on sleep meds is $3 billion. So if you're going to invest, do it in pharmaceuticals. Okay. So the study researcher compared death rates of over 1 million American adults who tracked their nightly sleep patterns as a part of a 2002 cancer prevention study. The results indicated there was a link between sleep and mortality, and they really shocked folks. Now, since then, similar studies have been corroborated in Europe and East Asia. Short sleep and long sleep are associated with lots of illnesses. Of course, depression. You're sleeping all day. You're depressed, dude. Obesity. Yeah. You're not moving. You're not getting up. Metabolism slow. Obesity is also associated with not much sleep. A lot of people think, oh, I'm going to get up and I'm going to get moving. No. You carb load. You load them carbs to keep awake, you see. Also been associated with heart disease. All those studies for years they did on those nurses that slept really bizarre hours because they worked those 17-hour shifts, 12 to 17-hour shifts all night at the hospital. And then they'd get little sleep, and then they'd get a lot of sleep, so they were all off. Anyway, the researcher says, don't really know yet what the cause is and what is the effect. We don't know if a short sleeper can live longer by extending their sleep. We don't know if a long sleeper can live longer by setting the alarm clock a little bit earlier. But what they did find was the folks that got generally 7 hours or 7.5 hours a night are healthier. Okay, there you go. Now, hopefully you can find some way to figure that out in your life and work it through. All right, I'd love to hear from you too. If you want to give me a call here at the studio. Yeah, the lines are open. I am going to answer some questions from listeners about their relationships, though, from email. I'd like to do that as well, so let me get to some of that. 818-602-4498, that's the number. Oh, also today, I want to share with you, we're going to have another version of Dr. Michelle's On the Couch Fear Factor, where I talk about the latest phobias. Some of the strangest phobias. And, of course, the big phobia today. Oh, and, you know, there's another name for it as well. It's Triskaidekaphobia. Triskaidekaphobia. Fear of Friday the 13th. So we'll talk about that, too, a little bit. Some of the most bizarre fears. You're going, what? Or maybe you can identify with those. Those would be great, too. All right, now let's flip through some of the questions here. Oh, let me go online and pull up a question here. I get a lot of questions from guys. I want to hear more from women. Ladies, if you have any more issues or questions, please email me, docmichelle@aol.com. D-O-C Michelle, two E's, two L's, @aol.com. And I'll be happy to answer some of your questions online. Okay, if you have any relationship questions that you may want to ask me, I would be happy. I would be happy to respond to you. That'll be great. We've got Brandon. Brandon, and where are you writing? Let's see. You didn't say where you're writing. Let me see if I can find where he's from. Anyway, Brandon says, Dear Dr. Michelle, this sounds really familiar to me. Maybe I answered him once before, and I'm losing it. How do I deal with the difference between men and women? Okay, there's a big difference. How do you deal with it? I don't quite know what you are asking there, but you can already kind of, as a man, you've got to kind of anticipate and read or anticipate like women's wishes, hopes, and concerns. Yeah, we think you're psychic and we want you to know everything we're feeling. It's really important. You're doers, we're thinkers. Men have everything that women have and vice versa. We do. The difference is in the degree to which every gender has it. So the gender difference is large, but you can understand women better because, of course, you're a guy and you know what you're feeling. Are you having problems understanding ladies? Is that the deal? I guess so. Okay. Women, no-brainer, are more emotional than men. Men are from Mars, women are from Venus. Pick up the book, Brandon. It's real easy. It's, you know. Did you know that the size of the brain region that does emotional processing is larger than women? Yes. We have that larger part of the brain than men. That means we're more emotional. We're crazed. We get really crazed. And then those neurotransmitters start kicking and then we're wild. Men are usually more directed and focused than women, however. We're focused. Oh, sure. Hell yes, we women are focused on the feelings. Men are focused on the tasks at hand. So, on ladies' side of the line, we send our meanings out more in our feelings than what we do or even say. We do say a lot, though. And we repeat it several times. And we also like to throw up the past. So, we expect you to get our meaning the way that we get meaning from other people. We expect it. We expect you to get your meaning, Brandon, with your feelings of what we're saying to you. But that's not going to happen because, again, your meanings go out in words and actions. And you expect, Brandon, usually women to find your meaning, what you're trying to get across, in what you say and do. Not the touchy-feely, verbal, emotional stuff. Okay, so that, you know. If men's emotional makeup were like as immediate as women's, Brandon, then you'd get a woman's message every time. And if women, if we were as centered and directed as guys, then we'd get a man's meaning every time. We wouldn't have to be going, why aren't you answering me? Come on, I'm serious. What? How do you feel about that? You know, we do it. A good way to deal with the major differences between men and women? Try to see that your own emotional makeup is amplified in her. And then, on the other hand, your own action makeup has a backseat to the high volume of her emotional makeup. All right? The more you look for how, you know, what you do and say makes her feel, the better you'll fare with her. You've got to kind of understand her a little bit and be a little more verbal and look at some feelings. And at the same time, if you have a good communication relationship with her, Brandon, what you have to do is you have to kind of tell her that you're a thinker and doer. And you don't express your feelings that much, probably. And that, you just do stuff. You know. So we judge our lives, we women, and our world. By the way, it stirs our emotions. We got to feel it all. And of course we analyze it, of course. Guys, Brandon, you probably make judgments more with your logical thinking and a wish to take action. Gives you a sense of control. Take action and handle it. How can I handle it? And we do admire this in you, by the way. We may not understand the way you handle stuff the same way. I mean, that's why guys are so frustrated, because a lot of times we are talking about our feelings and saying, God, fix it. God, I don't know what to say. You haven't said this to me. You haven't expressed this. But I've shown you. I've come home early every night. But I want you to talk to me more. I want you to tell me about it. You know? So we're going to look for, first of all, we're going to look for the effect of what you do on how we feel. So try to just understand that, Brandon, and give that a try. Try to, you know. When she's going on, or whoever ladies you're with, which you didn't really get into, are talking about emotions and expressing themselves emotionally, and you're really having a hard time understanding that, just try to get that. Our brains are bigger. No, just kidding. The brain region that does emotional processing is larger. All right. Doesn't matter about size of brain, by the way. But that's what. So, Brandon, I hope I helped you. Yeah, just try to think like a woman a little bit more and understand. We've got to talk. Come on, women, be talking. That's our deal. That's what we do. Okay? All right, you can also email me at docmichelle@aol.com. If you have a question or relationship problem, I'd like you to just let me know a couple of words where I can get back to you. And then if you want to call, you can do so as well. That'd be great. On the air live here. But I am kind of looking at, some of the emails. Boy, they're coming in. 818-602-4498. Okay. And coming up in a little bit, maybe I'll get to Lisa's question about why her boyfriend is such an asshole. That's helpful. I need a little more information, Lisa. Come on. I'll be reading your email in just a little bit. But this is, these things intrigue me, these questions, because they're... It's not really, I want more details. Tell me what he does that makes you feel so angry and why he treats you like that. Why are you feeling that? All right, let's take one of these live radio tests to find out how you look at love. This is personalitytest.com. It's a really cool website. It has a lot of fun tests. Doesn't necessarily mean they are psychologically empirical. They're just fun to give, and they're fun website tests. And it makes you think about, maybe I am. And if you're not like some of the results that I'm giving you based on your answers, it just gives you things to think about, maybe. And then when you say, gee, I'm not like that, and Dr. Michelle's wrong, it at least is giving you something to think about, and then you can define what you really are like. How's that? That's my disclaimer for the validity of these tests. How's that? Or not. I'm not. How do you look at love? I'm going to give you a test, and I want you to answer me honestly. And I'm going to tell you what your answer means based on this personalitytest.com thing. This is not coming from Dr. Michelle. I have not empirically tested this. This is a fun thing. Get you thinking. That's all. By the way, you and I do not have a therapeutic relationship. I just want to put that out there on the air. This is just suggestions and helpful stuff. Things to think about. That's my disclaimer here. All right. Scenarios that attempt to explain your outlook on love. The first answer that pops into your head, think, and I will answer it. And what that means. How do you look at love? The end of the world is coming. The end of the world is coming. Number one. This is about picking animals, by the way. Yeah. If you can save only one kind of animal, which one will you pick? I'm going to give you choices. You don't get to pick your own. The mongoose is not in there. All right. The end of the world is coming. If you can save only one kind of animal, which one will you pick? Rabbit, sheep, deer, or a horse? Rabbit, sheep, deer, or a horse? Which one, quick? If you picked a rabbit, you're cold as ice on the outside. You are cold. You are chill. You are, but you're warm on the inside. If you picked a sheep, you're obedient and warm. If you picked a deer, you're elegant and well-mannered. Your outlook on love. If you picked a horse, you're unbridled, free-spirited, and free. How's that? All right, number two. Your choice represents the impression that you would like to give to your partner. Number two. If you had to be an animal, which one would you choose? If you had to be an animal, are you a dog? Bow, wow, wow, yippee-yo. Are you a cat? Are you a horse? Are you a snake? Which one would you choose? Your choice represents, again, the impression that you'd like to give to your partner. If you're a dog, you're not a dog. It says you're loyal and faithful. If you'd like to be a dog, if you'd like to be a cat, it says your outlook on love, you are stylish. Yeah, you're sly. If you would like to be a horse, it says you're optimistic in your love outlook. And if you'd like to be a snake, contrary to what you might think, those of you who said you'd rather be a snake, you can slither around, it means you're flexible. Okay? How's that? Personalitytest.com, not Dr. Michelle's test, just saying it like it is. Number three, if you have the power to make one species disappear forever, ooh, which one would that be? Which one would that be? If you want to make one species disappear forever, a lion? A snake, a crocodile, or a shark? All deadly beasts. Lion, snake, crocodile, shark, quick, pick. Your choice represents the behavior that would cause you to break up with people or your partner, or have caused you to break up. Your behavior. If you picked a lion, you picked a partner who's arrogant and authoritative. And you broke up with him. Okay. If you picked a snake, your partner was too emotional and moody and you don't know how to please him or her. If you picked a crocodile to make this species disappear forever, you broke up with your partner because of their ruthlessness. If you'd make a shark disappear, you broke up with your partner because of their insecurity, supposedly, according to this test. All right, here we go. If one of the following animals could speak, which would you prefer it to be? Number four, if one of the following animals could speak, which would you prefer it to be? Would you like a sheep to talk to you? Would you like a horse to talk to you? There was a talking horse, wasn't there? I saw that on TV Land, on the cable channel. Wasn't there a horse talking? Mr. Ed. That's right. Rabbit. Would you prefer a rabbit to talk to you? Or would you prefer a bird to talk to you? Birdie. You want a birdie to talk to you? Your choice of the animal you would like to talk to you represents the kind of relationship that you would like to build with your partner. All right? So if you'd like a sheep to talk to you, you both know what the other person is thinking without saying a word. If you'd like a horse to talk to you, both of you should be able to talk about everything and anything with no secrets kept. A rabbit? A relationship that makes you feel warm and always in love. Mm-hmm. All right. A bird? Supposedly, a long-lasting relationship. Here you go. Number 5. On an isolated island, you can only have one of the following as your companion. Which one would you choose? A human, a pig, a cow, or a bird? Isolated on an island, which one would you have as your companion? Many clients who come in say their human partners are pigs. All right, let's see here. Your choice shows whether you're capable of committing adultery. All right, so if you would like to have a human, you know, with you on the island, and that's all you got, you're probably not going to commit adultery. Probably not. A pig. You can't resist desire and lust, so you're likely to commit adultery. A cow. All right. If you'd like to have the cow on the island with you, you're tolerant and you'll try very hard not to do any kind of promiscuous behavior on your mate or partner. A bird. If you'd like a birdie on the island with you, you don't like to make commitments and you're likely to commit adultery. I'm like a bird. I want to fly away. Not empirically tested tests. Just fun stuff to think about. Number 6. If you have the ability, this will end soon. You getting bored? Okay, I'll get on to other stuff in just a minute. I think it's kind of silly. It's fun stuff. If you had the ability to tame all animals, which would you prefer as a pet? Who would you like to tame, baby? You want to tame a dinosaur? A white tiger? A white tiger? Do you want to tame a polar bear? Or do you want to tame a leopard? Leopard. All right. Here we go. Your choice represents your views about marriage. If you'd like to tame the dinosaur, you're quite pessimistic and you don't think happy marriages exist anymore nowadays. How's that? If you want to tame a white tiger, you think marriage is something precious. Once you get married, you'll treasure it and your partner very much. If you'd like to tame a polar bear, you're afraid of marriage. You think it would take away your freedom. You know what I'm talking about. If you would like to tame a leopard, you always wanted to get married, but in fact, you don't know what it's all about. How's that? That's a good answer. I like that. All right, here we go. Is that it? Is that all we got? I think that's all we got. All right. Did you like that? I mean, was some of that true? Oh, no, we've got more. Wait, there's more. If you could be an animal for 5 minutes, which of the following would you prefer to be? For 5 minutes, what would you like to be? A lion, a cat, a horse, or a pigeon? I'd like to be a pigeon. A rat with wings. So I can hang out in the Central Park and get fed all day long. If you'd like to be an animal for 5 minutes, which of the following would you prefer to be? Lion, cat, horse, or pigeon? Your choice represents your views about love at this present moment. If you picked a lion, you always thirst for love. You can do anything for it, but you won't fall for it easily. If you want to be a cat for 5 minutes, you're quite self-centered. You think of love as something you can get and trash anytime you want, you narcissists. You cat people. Okay, here come the emails. Here they come. I love animals. Come on. Kitty cats, doggies. I love them all. If you could be an animal and wanted to be a horse for 5 minutes, you don't want to be tied by a steady relationship. You just want to flirt. You know who you are. You wild stud. If you could be an animal for 5 minutes and you picked a pigeon, you think of love as a commitment for both parties. I have no responsibility for these tests or the results. They are not necessarily empirical. They just come from a fun test site and make you think things about yourself. And if some of the answers told you were not true about yourself, then you can think about what really is. And if that stimulates your brain to think about who you are and your choices in life, then so be it. Okay? And you can respond to me at docmichelle@AOL.com if you have any questions or comments. That was a really stupid test. What were you thinking? All right. I have the top 10 weirdest demands of celebrities and rockers, performers, which are kind of fun. You know, celebrities, even those on the D-list, have often been known to make outrageous demands on movie shoots, concert tours. You know, when they stay in a hotel or, you know, in trailers, whatever, green rooms. But some of these are really, really interesting. And it tells you a little bit about the person. So let's see some of the things. Do you want to hear the rockers first or you want to hear? Oh, you want to hear the actors first? Okay. Well, let's just mix them up because there's some weird stuff and there's some really cool stuff. Eminem. I haven't heard from him in a while. Yeah, he's got some new music coming out. It's kind of cool. Eminem requires a PlayStation when he's out touring. He's like a little kid, you know. He wants a PlayStation for video games in his trailer and or his hotel room. He wants a ping pong table set up. He wants a basketball hoop inside his hotel room. He wants a giant flat screen TV, and who doesn't? He wants a personal masseur at his beck and call, and who doesn't? And a quote on his little request form here, it says, whatever kind of fast food exists on the continent. I love it. Cheeseburger, cheeseburger. Whatever kind of fast food exists on the continent, that's Eminem's requirements. Not too bad, PlayStation, video game, ping pong. Come on, the guy likes to have fun. I like that. Fun-loving kind of guy. I do like the personal masseur at his beck and call as well. All right, you know, there's some down-to-earth people. Regression to Childhood is Depeche Mode, the rock group. I love these guys. They have to have a dozen drumsticks from Kentucky Fried Chicken constantly being filled up in the bucket. They want 10 tuna sandwiches, and they want 5 on white bread and 5 on brown bread. Displayed on a bed of lettuce on a tray covered in saran wrap. Now, what does that make you think about? Mommy! Mommy making lunch for you and your friends. Of course, they're kids. They're having fun. They're on the road, and they're makes them feel like home with mommy. They're regressing to childhood. 10 tuna sandwiches. You got the white bread on the brown bread, and you got them half and half. How cute is that? Come on, moms. We used to do that, right? No? You got saran wrap so the doesn't get dry, and you laid out on the thing. Okay. Christina, Aguilera. Christina Aguilera. She requires organic fruits and vegetables, very healthy, soy milk and soy cheese in her hotel rooms. However, she kind of goes into the negative side when she orders Flintstones fruit chewable vitamins along with Flintstones cereal. She likes Nesquik and Coke. Coca-Cola, the real thing / no diet, she says, which is kind of cool. She has this thing when she's driving, Christina Aguilera. It has nothing to do with her accommodations backstage that I already read to you. It's all to do with her trip from the airport to the stadium where she's going. She specifically demands a police escort wherever she goes. And just to make it all a little more difficult for the promoter, she insists that under no circumstances are the vehicles to be allowed to encounter any delays due to traffic because she has her police escort, which gets through all the traffic. So she doesn't like to stop much, but whatever. Maybe it's the no diet and no decaf Coca-Cola. Hypes her up a little bit. What else do we have? Oh, this is kind of cool. Rod Stewart refuses to tolerate any light in a hotel room for his afternoon nap. I get that totally. Love those blackout curtains, man, especially when you're performing up and you're up all night. And you go to bed at 6 a.m. He has a special darkening team. And he sends them to the hotel to advance before he gets into his room after partying all night and into the morning to seal all the cracks. He seals all the cracks, with that black masking tape. Everything has to be completely, it's like nighttime, so he can sleep. That makes sense. I'm totally into, those masks, those sleep masks. Yeah, if it gets you down deeper, quicker in sleep, go for it. He also asked for 13 soccer balls because he and his guys like to play when they wake up at 3 in the afternoon. They like, okay, what else? You heard about Van Halen, the legendary rockers. What they used to do is they demanded M&Ms in their tour rider. Huge bowl. M&Ms was their thing, And they had some poor flunky, though, remove all the brown ones. They didn't like brown M&Ms. There was something psychological about the brown M&Ms. No. So this is really true. They had some poor guy go in there, girl guy, and pick out by hand all the brown M&Ms. This is really important. This is called control freaks. And their order became so legendary that the Rolling Stones once requested in a tour writer, their tour writer, when they went on tour, and I love this, that they get all the brown M&Ms. They wanted Van Halen's flunky to save them in little baggies, in those little sealed bags, so they would receive all the brown M&Ms that Van Halen discarded, because that's a waste of great candy. Good for you guys. I love that. I'm trying to figure out who is really kind of weird. I mean, yeah, that's kind of weird. That's a control freak thing. They just, get their jollies out of seeing some poor guy stand there and pick out all the brown M&Ms. There's two M&Ms in the bottom that are brown. You're fired! Trying to think of somebody who's more contemporary. Busta Rhymes is cool. He knows how to have a good time. Remember Busta Rhymes? He's a rapper. He demands a little more than a supply of Moët Chandon champagne. He likes that. He likes a lot of champagne. A bucket of Kentucky Fried Chicken, always continuously being refilled. What is it with KFC? And some condoms. He's got to have those too. But he's, he likes a bowl of those. Presumably he brings his own groupies. He didn't order any of those. The late great opera singer Luciano Pavarotti was never concerned with anything except stray odors, including heavy perfumes. Any kind of odors that were like nasty or even perfumey or too strong, he had a phobia about. There must be no distinct smells anywhere near the artist. So some flunky had to go around spraying the neutralizer, the air neutralizer, from one room to another. Okay, whatever. What else? Barry Manilow's cool. He demands, he's very cheap, supposedly. But so he, that's why he owns so much, because he's smart. Yeah, he hangs on to his money and he's invested a lot. He stipulates that his fan club, all the people that always show up for him, he has a lot of regulars. They show up at 11 a.m., they get in there he comes in a little bit later into the hotel to decorate his dressing room. He wants his fans. They give him materials. It's like a arts and crafts class. He says, here's all this cool stuff. Bring some really, I want sparkles and I want pretty pink paper mache and I want, you just do what you want to do. Just decorate my dressing room. Of course, they have a security scan going around and find that there's nothing really strange in the room. What else? Smart. Aretha Franklin. She has a uniquely different demand. She wants $25,000 cash of her appearance fee. Cash. She wants cash. No cash. $25,000 in my hand before I get on that stage. No cash. No show. $25,000. Don't know what she does with it. The cash immediately in her hand. But good for her. That's very smart. Mm-hmm. Now here's narcissism and waste. When J-Lo rocked up, remember to add her voice to charity single benefit AIDS victims? Remember that? She was really involved in that. Nobody expects diva demands when you're doing an AIDS benefit or when you're doing any kind of benefit, for God's sakes. Come on, you're volunteering. Yeah, you might want a comfortable, clean room. There you go. But J-Lo apparently demanded and reportedly got a white room stocked with white flowers, white curtains, white candles. They were Paris perfume scented only. White couches, white Egyptian cotton with 250 thread count, and a variety of complicated foods. She wanted this in a 45-foot-long trailer. And she got that. She wanted pie and ice cream. Really, really demanding, you know, just very specific foods as well. And by the way, what was kind of sad, it was a benefit. And yeah, good for her. She did a benefit. And that's really neat and all that. But she was supposed to perform for 2 hours. She performed for 90 minutes. And all the food was left uneaten. Went to waste. They had to get rid of it. What else? Trying to think. What else is real? Oh, Vice President Dick Cheney requires all televisions in his room to be turned to Fox News. He requires a pot of decaf coffee, 4 cans of diet caffeine-free Sprite, copies of the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal every morning. That's normal. And, of course, he wants his staff to be notified in advance of any hotel gifts left in the suite. You think? What's that little brown box? Ah, it's ticking! Ah! Mariah Carey wants that her hotel room be fitted with gold faucets. Every suite she goes into has to have a gold faucet. There's a new toilet seat that must be installed before her arrival. God knows those antibacterial cleaners don't work. Her own bed linens. She has her own bed linens that she brings. Her own videos can only be played on the 2 DVD players that she demands for her room, and the workers who come in have to watch them. She brings her dog, and she and her dog bathe only in French mineral water. Okay. I'm done. A little too... Think about the demands that you would bring if you were going into, you know, a hotel room and you were... Or working on a movie set in your trailer. What kind of things would you want? Kind of reflects who you are a little bit. All right, let's get into quickly another version of Fear Factor with Dr. Michelle on the couch. Triskaidekaphobia. What? Triskaidekaphobia. That's today. That's a fear of Friday the 13th, which we talked about a little earlier, and why, and the folklore involved and all that. A lot of people are not getting out there. A lot of people are not moving much on Friday the 13th. They're not going out on the freeway. So there you have it. As many as 25% of all Americans are affected by one phobia, fear, or another. It's a persistent, excessive, unrealistic fear of an object, person, animal, activity, or situation. And the person who has the phobia tries to avoid the thing that triggers the fear or endures it with great anxiety and distress. Scary stuff. So let's talk about some of the crazy, wild and crazy phobias we have. Kissing. Yep. Philomophobia. A lot of people have a fear of kissing. I think those are the germ freaks, aren't they? Is that right? No, maybe something else. Geliophobia. What's geliophobia? That's the fear of laughter. Philophobia. The fear of falling in love. Hi, TJ McCormick. How are
Hello.
You, cutie?
I'm good.
Good. It's nice to see you.
Nice to see you.
You have a great show coming in, don't you?
Yeah.
A goodie. Photophobia is a fear of phobias. I fear it, therefore it is, and I'm phobic about the fear. I like that. Pteranophobia. Pteranophobia. That's a fear of being tickled by feathers. Oh, God forbid the feathers. And that's enough of that. I always like to talk. I know. It's really funny. I wanted to get to our cake personality test, which really tells you, what the research says about you if you pick a particular type of dessert in situations. But you know how valid and empirical that test was I gave you about animals earlier. So you better be listening for this, because we're going to do this next time. It's going to tell you more about yourself. All right, it's Friday the 13th. This is Dr. Michelle on the couch. I hope you have enjoyed being there with me. I certainly have. TJ McCormick's here, and he's ready for his show. I'm looking forward to it. I always listen to him. We love you, baby. All right, everybody. Have a great weekend. It's time to just... You can stay on the couch if you want, guys. You can do that. Just kick back. put your head back, relax, and, you know, we'll talk later. You can find me on my website, drmichelletherapy.com. Come on down. Love to hear from you. Have a wonderful day, and do take care of yourself always. That's the best thing to do. Bye-bye.
Dancing alone just like I knew.